How you doing? I'm Tim Cocker with a British success story for this episode of the Radio Academy podcast. Now, currently there's a sporting carnival that is meandering its way through the mountains and valleys and towns and villages of France. And for the 11th time, the Tour de France is being covered by the Cycling Podcast, who recently marked 10 years in the saddle. They are podcasting OGs. And not only are they early adopters, they have been continual innovators to stay relevant and to keep growing into a fully fledged independent media outfit with an expanding cast of content makers and producers, and yes, listeners too. There were three men, journalists and friends at the beginning, one of them being Lionel Burney, who spoke to me during a quiet moment after arriving in Bayonne. And I asked Lionel what vision or expectation, if any, he had for the podcast in those early days.
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, the Cycling Podcast first covered the Tour de France in 2013. And, I mean, it was the next step on a little bit of a journey that myself, our dear late friend Richard Moore and Daniel Freiber went out on. We'd all sort of dabbled a little bit in podcasting before, and at the 2012 Tour de France, Richard and I did a podcast for the magazine we were working for at the time. I mean, the magazine wasn't particularly interested in the fact that we were doing it, and I don't think we collected too many listeners, but it gave us an inkling that perhaps podcasting was a way to kind of rejuvenate ourselves and our coverage of the tour, because we all sensed that working as freelance journalists, it was becoming harder. Work was starting to dry up a bit, and we were looking for kind of a new frontier. But I don't think any of us really imagined that we would go on to kind of establish a podcast, you know, create a company and still be here at the Tour de France 10 years on. Of course, you know, the whole story would have been impossible without Richard Moore, who died last March, and that's March 2022. And so there has been a great degree of kind of sadness that he is not here to kind of mark the anniversary. So it hasn't felt like a sort of celebratory period, but I think it's a significant one that we've managed to keep going since losing Richard and stuck to the kind of founding principles that we didn't really write down or even articulate to each other. We just pressed record and tried to see where it would, you know, pan out, how it would pan out. Experiment with the medium, you know, improve telling stories in audio, applied our journalistic instincts to a new medium, audio, with the flexibility that we didn't have a boss telling us what we were getting wrong. We could learn by our own mistakes, I guess.
As you said, you hadn't articulated them, but what are those values and core principles?
I think the first thing is that we try to convey the fact that the Tour de France is a kind of mad, rolling roadshow, and that there isn't really one definitive story each day. You know, as journalists, we follow the kind of the big stories, we try to analyse the race, but the Tour de France is about so much more than just what we see on TV, really. And I think the unacknowledged truth of life on the tour is that we probably see a lot less of the race than some viewers who are sitting at home. We're not trying to give a blow-by-blow account. We're trying to convey the sense of movement, excitement, atmosphere. Try to scoop up our listeners and bring them along for the ride. And, France is as much a star in our podcast as the race is, hopefully. Welcome to Bayonne, at the end of a fast, frenetic stage. Well, the finale of it was, anyway. My name's Lionel Burney. We are overlooking the river. We're enjoying a post-race beer. I'm with Francois Thomazeau. Good evening, Francois.
Good evening.
And Mitch Docker.
Good evening.
Well, Francois, tell us a little bit about where we are, first of all.
We're in Bayonne, famous for its ham. We'll get back to it later. We're in a place called Le Bistrot des Halles. And there are lots of Bistrot des Halles in France. You know, it's become a trend to have a bistro in the market hall, and it's very trendy. And Bayonne, like many other towns, has exactly that. So that's where we are. We're overlooking the river. That's called La Nive. And, there's bars and terraces all along La Nive. La Nive being an affluent of l'Adour. And actually, the way they converge in Bayonne and then go straight to the sea. The sea is not very far away.
One thing I'm fascinated about, Lionel, is the difference that you find in the audience reaction as a written press journalist versus in this audio form?
Well, speaking purely personally, I mean, I've written for magazines, national newspapers, and often the feedback would be pretty minimal. I mean, yeah, the criticism, often, if you got something wrong or somebody doesn't like what you've written, I mean, written media is a lot more black and white, often, literally, isn't it? You know, I suppose a podcast audience on any subject is sort of self-selecting, isn't it? If you tune into a podcast and after, you know, 15, 20 minutes think, well, this isn't really for me, well, that's fine. And so our job, I suppose, is to inform and entertain our listeners, our core listeners, whilst obviously hoping to attract some more along the way. But I think it's the sense that people are overhearing a conversation between friends, because essentially that's how the podcast started and that's how it continues. And even though, you know, I don't know Mitch Docker as well as I knew Richard or I know Daniel, you know, we're forming a kind of friendship or relationship. There's a bit of to and fro where we feel we can sort of lightly rib each other, and I think people enjoy that sense of us being on a road trip. They get to sit at the table with us and hear our discussions about what's gone on in the day's race.
How important do you feel in the whole story of the cycling podcast is the fact that you've constantly evolved? You've added strands to your programmes. You've focused on more and more tours to make it a year-round for people listening, and subscription tier as well. You were kind of ahead of the game in that sense, because that's become the standard now.
Again, we didn't plan this. It all happened fairly organically and largely as a result of Richard's drive and vision. I mean, over the years, I can pinpoint the key moments in the development of the cycling podcast. One was the creation of the Friends of the Podcast subscription system, which was our attempt to try to monetize some special episodes, basically to ensure that we weren't entirely dependent on advertising and sponsorship, which, as we're experiencing now, you know, that's a fickle world. We wanted to be able to commit to year-round coverage, and in order to do that, we need to generate funds. And so at that time, 2015, there wasn't, to our knowledge anyway, there wasn't a system of being able to charge money for podcasts. Apple weren't doing it, Spotify weren't doing it. I'm not even sure Spotify were into podcasts at that point. I don't think Patreon had come along, or certainly we, you know, in our investigations at the time, we couldn't see a way to try to generate funds from special episodes. And so we kind of built our own system, and it was hugely important to our sense of security, really. It meant that for the first time we could say we are going to commit to daily coverage of cycling's three big three-week-long stage races, the Tour, of course, the Giro d'Italia and the Vuelta a España, as well as weekly episodes all year round. And then we added the cycling podcast Femina, which is a show focusing on the women's racing scene, and then some of the other shows you mentioned. You know, we've never really been risk takers in the sense that, you know, biting off more than we can chew or expanding too rapidly. Each step, I guess, was a sense of, well, we can handle what we're doing now, and so why don't we try and add another little strand? But like I say, we didn't sit down in 2013 or 2014 and plan out a sort of multi-tiered, multifaceted content plan. It just all sort of happened to evolve, happily so.
Any other nuggets of wisdom that you can share, or perhaps secrets behind the success?
We're very, very fortunate that we chose the name The Cycling Podcast, because it, you know, at the time, I can remember us, Richard and I, talking about this round and round and round at the start, thinking it was a bit flat-footed, a bit lacking in creativity or excitement. You know, should we go for a kind of a word that means something in cycling, or could we come up with something a bit cleverer? But in hindsight, I think it was absolutely key to at least telling people what we are. There's no ambiguity there. I think that played a large part in us being able to gain an audience relatively quickly. I recently spoke to Orla Shenoui, who was, well, she still is a host of our cycling podcast Feminin show, and she was one of the early guests on our 2013 Tour de France coverage, and she at the time worked for Sky, and I can remember feeling pretty nervous. A proper professional broadcaster was coming onto our little homemade podcast, you know, that we were recording on Rich's iPhone and that John Mooney was editing together back in the UK, and just feeling, yeah, a sense of imposter syndrome, which I don't think has ever really gone away, if I'm perfectly honest. I mean, I'm not a broadcaster. I probably haven't got a kind of BBC broadcast voice, but I do know what I am fairly strong at, and I know what I bring to the podcast, and I try to focus on the positives. But I think that the fact that, you know, we've managed to keep going through some really difficult times over the past 15 or 16 months since losing Richard, it is testimony to the strength of the thing that we built in the first place, and the fact that, like I say, we are attracting new listeners all of the time, and fingers crossed, retaining people who've been with us since the very beginning, some of them, which is fantastic. I mean, if I'd thought about that back in 2013, I would have been incredulous and also slightly daunted by the prospect. But now, you know, we're out at the tour, we meet podcast listeners every now and again. We saw lots of them in Bilbao and San Sebastian over the weekend, and I sometimes pinch myself at what we've managed to create.
And how would you assess the audio landscape in 2023 versus 2013?
It's interesting. I mean, there's a huge English-speaking contingent here at the Tour de France, many of whom are also making podcasts as well. So that kind of spreads the listeners a bit more thinly, I guess. But against that, I'm pretty heartened by the fact that our numbers have continued to hold up and grow, in fact, in the last couple of years, when there's been so much more competition out there. And I think that just basically indicates that more people are discovering podcasting as a medium. I know everyone's kind of said, well, it's radio on demand, isn't it? But it's not really, is it? It is something that can fit into someone's daily routine. The more podcasts that there are, the more potential listeners there are, I guess. And so I think the whole sort of sports podcasting landscape is incredibly strong. The difference for us is we are a small independent organisation. We're not owned by a large media company, and we don't have the backing of a large media company either, but that has positives as well as the, you know, any negatives. But we are always, you know, again, it's one of those things when I see our podcast high up in the Apple sports charts alongside podcasts that are, you know, Peter Crouch and the BBC's Ashes coverage. I mean, we're kind of on their coattails as we speak, and it's another one of those where I sometimes can't quite believe my eyes that we're in that company.
You've used the word commitment already. And for me, from where I sit, that's a massive part of the success of the cycling podcast. You're there, as you've mentioned, through the big events every day. You're there every week through the year, all your different shows. And I think that speaks to the care you have for your audience. And I think it's also a reminder sometimes that whilst your content is fantastic, don't misunderstand me, sometimes what marks out the ones that are really successful is the things that require no skill, which is just effort and work ethic.
Richard was always fond of quoting Terry Wogan. I don't know whether it was a direct, accurate quote, but his thing was that radio is about repetition. Television is about innovation, but radio is about repetition. And I definitely think that there's a lot in that. That consistency, people know what to expect. They know our characters, I suppose. You know, we're not really a sort of hot takes outlet. We don't try to come down on you know, any of the big stories with a definitive take, because I don't think in a sport as complex as cycling that there is just one version of events. That's always been at the heart of what we do, the sort of honesty that we're just trying to kind of pin as much of the jelly to the wall as we can, so to speak, you know, knowing that it's a pretty impossible task. I think if we sat at home watching on TV and our opinions kind of would solidify, we'd probably come up with, you know, much more sort of assertive takes on what's going on. But I'm not necessarily sure that that would be any more accurate style of coverage. So I think we're fairly comfortable with the sort of sports journalism that we're doing. As you say, the consistency to just keep going, that really has stood us in an enormous stead over the last year or so since we lost Richard. Because, you know, first thoughts when he died was not least because we were losing a colleague, but we were losing our friend as well. And we had to, you know, get back on the road without him. And his absence is felt every day, certainly by me here at the Tour de France and by Daniel when he's part of the team as well.
And Lionel, just from me to finish on a bit of a story, actually, we talked there about the imperative to keep the podcast going. One of my last interactions with Richard, the last weekly podcast we ever did was fairly typical in the sense that I was scrambling around, floundering, trying to find headphones. And, you know, this was a sort of cliche that had been repeated for several weeks since I'd come back to Berlin. Anyway, this had caused some issues during recording. And after the podcast, I got a message, or after the podcast that week, I got a message from Richard on WhatsApp asking me to remind him of my address. I thought it was probably some invoice I hadn't sent or some piece of admin I hadn't taken care of. However, I think on the Friday of that week, we recorded on the Monday, so on the Friday, I went downstairs in my apartment block and I found a package from Amazon sticking out the letterbox. And it was some nice Bluetooth headphones, which I am wearing now. And yeah, I've almost in the last couple of weeks taken that as a message, a symbol, to remind me, not that I would have wavered or will waver, but to remind me that I need to uphold his legacy, carry on with the podcast, and do it with a pair of serviceable headphones.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing that I sort of tell myself in the morning, it's just right, get through the stage, get the episode over to the producers, get it online and move on to the next one. Because a bit like the old traditions of print journalism, you know, today's newspaper is tomorrow's fish and chip wrapper. You know, a podcast, there is room for the sort of imperfections, isn't there? You know, authenticity, I think, counts for more than a sort of supremely slick, polished product. I'm not saying that we don't put a lot of care into crafting episodes that hang together nicely and make sense coherently and all the rest of it, but we are out with just, you know, some microphones and a Zoom recorder, and, you know, if there's a noisy backdrop, that's just what it is today. You know, we're adapting to the circumstances in front of us pretty much from the moment we get up in the morning to the moment we go to bed at night. And the one thing about the Tour de France is that you can very easily lose the wheel, so to speak, and find yourself missing an entire stage. That's happened before, but we've never missed an episode. So hopefully, touch wood, and I don't want to tempt fate, we'll be reaching Paris in a couple of weeks' time.
One final question, Lionel. The Tour de France and every tour that you cover has a start and a finish. The cycling podcast began. You said at the start you didn't really have a vision in your head about what the cycling podcast would be, certainly not 10 years on. Do you have any sense of where the journey might go, maybe even end?
I don't think so. You know, Daniel and I, we were in a bit of a survival phase for a number of months, really, over last winter. You know, again, I totally underestimated the size of the business that had grown up and how organically Richard and I worked together on a lot of the business aspects. You know, communication between us was sort of almost by osmosis. You know, he could send an email or a WhatsApp message and I'd know what he meant, and we were on the same page, and it would, you know, we it didn't really feel like we were working on stuff. Things were just happening all the time, and having lost, you know, that working relationship and having to sort of reconfigure everything in the background, it's shortened our horizons a little bit, and we're just, you know, making sure that we're still here for the 2024 Tour de France. I celebrated my 48th birthday a couple of days ago, and this is my 21st Tour de France. And I'm, you know, our colleague Francois Thomazeau, who is bowing out, has reached the French retirement age of 62, and he's made his decision that this is the last Tour de France for him. He's carrying on until Thursday and then bowing out at his favourite restaurant in the Pyrenees with a farewell dinner. I mean, I'm not sure I can see myself covering the tour day in, day out at 62. And I'm not sure it would necessarily be the best thing for the future of the cycling podcast either. I think our job over the next couple of years is to try to identify some new voices that understand what we are and what we're trying to do and put their own spin on it and create new teams so that the cycling podcast as an entity carries on, even if my appearances on it may decrease in years to come. I'm not signalling my retirement here. Far from it. I mean, I'm not in a fortunate enough position to do that. Not that I'd want to, but it definitely has made me think. What are we trying to kind of preserve and ensure remains of the cycling podcast? Because having built this thing, we can't just let it kind of wither away. And so that means we need to identify some new people, and that process is already underway. We've got different voices coming into the Tour de France, which will, keep things fresh. And the way to introduce those into such an intimate medium as audio is sometimes has to be sort of softly. We're underway with that process, but I really don't know where that will take us. But I'm actually quite excited by the challenge ahead.
I think the cycling podcast represents the opportunity that is in this platform, podcasting, which is, let's not forget, compared to other traditional media, radio included, still in its relative infancy. If you've got something to say or a story to tell, there's an audience out there and you can even make it a career. Obviously, the audio's got to be interesting or engaging, funny, relevant, but that's only part of it. It has to go along with effort and sacrifice and graft and drive and risk. The willingness to be bad in the pursuit of being good. In fact, that's a necessary part of the journey. And I think Lionel conveyed that brilliantly in this episode. And as you've heard, those guys have had a lot to overcome. So well done on 10 years. Enjoy the Tour de France. And here's to many more. And from some audio stalwarts on this episode to the new breed on the next episode, because you're going to be hearing from some of the winners and participants at the Young Audio Awards taking place on Friday, the 7th of July. The nominees, by the way, are at radioacademy.org, where you can also enter yourself or someone else into the 30 under 30, which is open now, and become a member from as little as £3 per month, which will give you access to all of the content that's there and training and networking opportunities as well.